This episode of Bend the Knee is brought to you by our bannermen, Lord Jason of House Ross, Lady Amanda of House Richardson, Lord Adam the Young Bull of House Parker, Sir Peter of House Whittingham, Sandy the Dragon, Blood of Queen Daenerys, and Lady of Jameson, Lord Nelson of the Long Isle, Sir Joshua of House Ross, Lady Liz of House Hendricks, Sir Matthew of House Perry.
This podcast is protected by Lord Hunter the Foulmouthed, Lady Amanda of House Ryan, Lady Rajal of House Stevens, Sir Ron of House Golson, Lord Robert the Unfrozen of House Butler, Lord Paramount of Skagos Island. Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt the Bud Knight, Fist of the Dragon, Maker of Gains.
And I am Sir Ezra the Watchful, Stealer of Hearts, Bandit of Time, Hero of Shree. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Catelyn 1 of A Clash of Kings, and in our Maester's Study, we will be discussing Torrhen Stark.
The King Who Knelt.
Yes.
Yeah, so, man... Back with another episode. Sir Ezra, how you doing, man?
Well, doing well. We have a big recording day for us. We're getting a lot of stuff done, going through all the different podcasts and the reading. We had to switch gears there. We were in a galaxy far, far away, and now we're we're in back in Westeros. It's awesome. It's just it's crazy. Our weekends are always just nuts, all just different fandoms. I have two books laid out here. You know, making a connection between, Clash of Kings and then a Game of Thrones because of the Raven that we have. It's just, it's wild. But I'm excited. And then, it's good.
Hey, it's just the way the wheel weaves. Okay.
That's right.
And
that's right.
And then that's where we'll be headed next. Yeah, putting in probably an 8-hour workday here in the studio, but it's great. We love it.
Yeah.
Jump between all these fandoms.
Yeah. Yeah.
So much fun. But you know what? It's good. We like to start off with hyperspace and get that one recorded because that one's a little more free flowing, and then boom, it's like, all right, so then we're primed, ready to go for Bend the Knee, get us going. And man, is there any, I know you're in Ohio,
yep,
and there's supposed to be some big storm coming. Are the winds of winter blowing there in
Ohio?
Oh
my, there was definitely some wind blowing. It was crazy. I mean, I guess north of us here, it was all ice and snow and everything. It was snowing down in like Texas and stuff though.
Jeez.
Like the other day.
Well, it's not snowing here. It is your standard kind of gray, cloudy, rainy Portland day.
Yeah, I sometimes try to think of like when I think of Portland, I'm like, where would it be in Westeros? Like, is it, you know. Where is it just gray? And actually, Braavos is kind of...
Like the Vale. I think the Vale is kind of like... Yeah, the Vale is similar. But then it just depends. You know, it's Oregon is such a weird... The Oregon and Washington and Northern California are so weird in that, Oregon's like, they're big states, but then most of it's actually desert, right? Mm-hmm. And then you get to the... And then as you get closer to the coast, you get the mountains, and then from like... You know, if you think of it as like a rectangle, well, and you're starting from the east side, then you go over about almost 80%, then you have the mountains, and then that remaining 10, you know, kind of 15% is like forest and rain.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And then you hit the beach. So it's kind of its own weather pattern here. But yeah, I would say it's probably like the Vale. You know,
yeah.
Rocky, okay. Foresty,
right.
Rainy.
Right. that's yeah. Cool. So no winds of winter are there for you, but is everything else,
nope.
Everything else going well?
Everything is going good. Just kind of a slow Sunday, you know, laundry going, I got up, got my morning workout in, and now we're just hammering away content here as we wait for the winds of winter, you know, it's pretty much where we're at.
We did do a little digging up on the Winds of Winter and maybe I guess every little teeny bit that I see just keeps indicating it's this year. So
that's what I'm thinking. So, you know, Gurr is not just Gurr's going to be presenting at that convention. He says he's going to be the Toastmaster. So, you know, until we get another little nugget, I'm assuming that it's coming out. Uh-huh. He's going to announce it at that convention. Yeah. I mean, what happens if he doesn't?
I don't know. It's either he's going to announce the new book or he's going to pull like a Walter Frey. Like, he's the Toastmaster, so it's like the Red Wedding type of situation where he's going out with a bang one of two ways at the convention. So I'm saying he's announcing the book. Like, that's although here's the thing. I just read about the Toastmaster thing and how he's going to be the host. And he said he didn't want to steal the thunder from the people who he was giving awards to. So,
well, I mean, that you can announce it at you don't have to say Harris wins of winter, the 10-year anticipated almost final installment in the epic Song of Ice and Fire series that attributed to the most successful television show of all time, Game of Thrones. Oh, and here's the award for, you know, you don't have to do it like that.
Well, I'm sure
he's not up there like Ricky Gervais, man. I mean, everyone was talking all about that thing. Did you see his speech there on the Academy Awards or whatever?
Who?
Ricky, is it Gervais, Jervis? Gervais, yeah. Where he kind of told Hollywood off. I thought it was kind of funny, but then...
No, he better not pull one of those.
I only saw a couple of clips. So as long as Gurr doesn't do something like that and, you know...
Here's my thing. You know, Gurm's a lot smarter than people like, you know, that and J.K. Rowling and other, you know, I mean, he's just kind of.
Well, let's stay away from her now, you know, especially. But
I think it's going to be cool. We're going to keep our eye on that. I think the announcement is going to be, you know, coming soon. So.
Yeah, so we'll see. But all right, man. Well, let's dive into this a little bit here. We do have a captain's report. Lord Robert the Unfrozen of House Butler, Lord Palamon of Skagos Island. What's the poll looking at like this week, Sir Ezra?
Yeah, so the question is this. Is the Grand Vale conspiracy theory true? Sometimes known as like the Grand Royce conspiracy. And I thought so in our group anyways, the overwhelming response is that it is true, that there is something going on there. And I thought maybe just for context, for folks who don't know much about that, really, I kind of touched on it just a tidbit last week. And actually, even going into our extended edition, I talked a little bit about Sansa and what's coming up with her. Robert Aaron, I always want to say, what? Yeah, sweet Robin. Yeah, Robert. Yeah. He is looking for almost like a Kingsguard, right? Mm-hmm. And so we went into that just a little bit, and so it kind of ties into it. Yeah, Robert Aaron. I keep saying Robin. I don't know why I keep saying that.
Right.
But anyways.
Well, it's similar.
The whole conspiracy is around the idea that Elaine Stone is Sansa Stark. And they're going to maybe use this in an attempt to take out Littlefinger or remove him from the position of power that he's put himself in. There seems to be a lot of stuff going on with this tourney that's happening with Harold Harding, who is showing up, and, you know, betrothals and whatnot. So the idea is that, he is looking for a way to take back some of the Vale's power and put it back into Vale family power, right? I mean, he doesn't want this outsider coming in and just taking over. There was all the questioning around Marillion and the death of Lysa Arryn. And I was talking to you because I sometimes forget, you know, the difference between show and book, and the way in the show that it works out is that she does reveal who she is. During the questioning or the trial period where they're trying to figure out what happened to Lysa, why was she, you know, killed, or did she commit suicide? There's a little bit more to it than that, but I mean, that's just the general idea, is that they are working towards reclaiming their own region and putting it back into Robert Aaron's, hands. So
yeah. Exactly. Well, and this is one of those things when we talk about our, you know, how do we get to point, you know, the characters who are in the show to get the characters who are in the book or in different positions to be in the show. And this is an area that seems a little bit different. There's a lot of things seem like they're going to have to happen to kind of get from what's going on in the Vale to get Sansa to end up leading an army towards the battle that's going on at Winterfell. Because they're just in a slightly, they're in some, it's kind of, it's pretty different.
Right. Well, and yeah, so it's sort of like there's actually a whole Reddit thread on all these different conspiracies happening in each of the regions. And so, you know, the Vale has to have its own conspiracy. I don't think it's as grand as what's happening
right
in the north.
Like the Grand Northern Conspiracy, yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just a few people who maybe have seen through this guise that Elaine has, Elaine Stone, Sansa Stark. I mean, really, Lysa, all she had to do was, I mean, she just said, you know, dye your hair and cover it up. And so, I don't know. Yeah, there's that. There was already talk too that Lysa was going to, that Elaine was going to marry, eventually when they revealed that she was Sansa Stark, was going to marry her son. And so I would have to imagine that some of the people in the Vale are already kind of thinking like, wait, who? Like Littlefinger's like niece, or if they're hearing even rumors of that, you know, because Marillion right is close by the Singer, and he's got to be telling all sorts of tales to different people. You know, he's making some coin or doing what, gaining some influence just because he's close with Lysa there, but especially before Peter shows up. So, yeah. But it's I don't know. I would say yes, there's something going on. I don't really know exactly that we have enough information to kind of figure it out, because there's even some subplotting and in the Winds of Winter release chapter where people are entering the Vale for this contest and they're trying to become, you know, one of the eight to surround little Robert. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, there's you can tell that something's going on, you know, just in the way they talk to Sansa, they're talking to each other, how people are positioning themselves and standing around. Just seems like it's a Game of Thrones, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, we'll see. And we can dive into that more as we get to some more chapters that involve the Vale and possibly even Sansa, because you do see a little bit of that in this book, right, with her and Littlefinger, as Sansa starts to plot a little bit of how possibly to escape kind of her.
Yeah. Hey, here's what, because she calls him, I always mess up Robert, it's, she calls him Sweet Robin. That's why.
Yes. Yep.
I keep forgetting that. She calls him Sweet Robin, and yeah, that's always why I go back and forth on that, so my bad.
Mm-hmm. That's okay. All right. Well, I think you have a little bit here on Torrhen Stark for our Maester study today.
Yeah. If people recall, I mean, when we went through A World of Ice and Fire and we were kind of covering Aegon's Conquest, you know, this is sort of a big, this is somewhat, it's a character who is referenced in today's chapter, because you go back to, he was one of the last known kings of Winter. Torrhen Stark was. He's known as the King Who Knelt. He was the head of House Stark, who reigned as king in the north until Aegon the First, Aegon the Conqueror, came and invaded Westeros. So, yeah, and there was actually there's some pretty cool stuff if you want to go back and look at, and maybe we can cover it at a different time, but as Torrhen Stark is moving, I mean, he has probably one of the largest hosts, right? He's got the north behind him, and mm-hmm. when he comes to meet with Aegon, there's a lot of plotting. There's even some rumor that perhaps he was going to attempt to kill the dragons, that they maybe had a plan with weirwood arrows to kill the dragon and everything. But in the end, I think maybe they weren't willing to risk that. And actually, ironically, you know, something that Catelyn says in this chapter is like, you know, if giving up your crown meant saving your sisters, it'd be well worth it. And I feel like yeah. that's something he kind of realizes. He also had the... he's not the first person that Aegon tries to go after. When Aegon comes and conquers Westeros, he starts again. He goes against like the Lannisters, Highgarden. So he's, you know, not necessarily going against the North. So Torrhen has the advantage of seeing how those other lords were treated, and you know that Aegon really is just coming and saying, I'm going to rule all of you guys. You still get to keep your lands, and you know, we'll change the titles up a little bit, but for the most part, you can worship whoever you want. You're just under my control, and this is my new empire.
Yeah.
So
yeah, my new empire. Yeah.
But yeah, so just a little cool connection to him, and you know, just the whole bit there, because that again is when the Targaryen reign started, and so now is this the first time? Let me think. Yeah, I mean, really, yeah, this is, yeah, so I guess maybe there were some other people in the histories who were trying to declare themselves as king, you know, like king of the Stepstones and stuff like that, little stuff, the Greyjoy Rebellion, things like that. So yeah, but this is really, I mean, we've now crowned Rob as king of the North, and so that's where this chapter kind of picks up, and so we're back to the time of Torrhen Stark or before. Yeah, he's a king of mm-hmm. Winter. So
yes. Yeah, so all right, well, let's move on over to our reread. This week we are in Catelyn 1. Last time we were with John, where John had found Samwell Tarly in the Dark Library cellar of Castle Black, where Sam had found a number of maps for the Great Ranging. Out in the courtyard, they watched the new recruits practicing as John talked with Donal Noy. After they presented their maps, Lord Commander Jorah Mormont discussed Maester Aemon's past with John. The last time we were with Catelyn was Catelyn 11 of A Game of Thrones, where she had returned to Riverrun for the first time in many years. After meeting with her ailing father, she seeks out Rob in the Godswood. After praying with his bannermen, Rob calls a council to determine their next move. The council argues for hours about which way to march and which king to support until Great John Umber gives a rousing speech and the bannermen proclaim Rob da King in da North.
Yeah.
It's just what it sounds like when they're saying it in the show. So this time, Catelyn 1. Catelyn watches as her son, King Robb Stark, presents his peace terms to his envoy, Sir Cleos Frey. Afterwards, Catelyn argues with Robb over his refusal to exchange Jaime Lannister and his plan to send Theon back to the Iron Islands. Later, Catelyn discusses the war with Brendan Tully, and they plan an alliance with King Renly Baratheon. So yeah, I mean, as you can see, man, the War of the Five Kings is starting, right? I mean, that's mm-hmm. Almost immediately following Ned's execution and King Robert's death. I mean, everything starts to move pretty fast, actually. I mean, think about like a year ago, like in, you know, Game of Thrones terms, man, everything was fine, right? Like, mm-hmm. man, we've been at peace for like 20 years. And the next thing you know, John Arryn, the Hand of the King, John Arryn is dead. The King, Robert Baratheon, is dead. His Hand of the King, Ned Stark, is dead. Joffrey Baratheon is proclaimed king, and we're at war, and everyone's proclaiming themselves king. So, I mean, we're at turmoil here, right?
Oh yeah, we are. And this is—I also call this chapter sort of the what is this? It's like the precursor to just Blunder City. I mean, like the setup here for just what Catelyn is thinking, and she kind of hints at some of the things that she and other lords are thinking about what Rob says here and his decisions. It's just all the blundering just starts here. It is just crazy, man. I get so when I read it, I'm just like, come on. You know, why couldn't this be right. different? Why don't we have Jon Snow standing next to his brother down here fighting, you know, two brothers just going, you know, ready to go to war? That's what it's frustrating.
Mm-hmm.
But
it is. And so
it's all right.
That's okay. All right. Hey, let's dive into it here. So her son's crown was fresh from the forge, and it seemed to Catelyn Stark that the weight of it pressed heavy on Rob's head. The ancient crown of the Kings of Winter had been lost three centuries ago, yielded up to Aegon the Conqueror when Torrhen Stark knelt in submission. What Aegon had done with it, no man could say. Lord Hoster's smith had done his work well, and Robb's crown looked much as the others was said to have looked in the tales told of the Stark kings of old. An open circlet of hammered bronze, incised with the runes of the first men, surmounted by 9 black iron spikes wrought in the shape of long swords. Of gold and silver and gemstones, it had none. Bronze and iron were their metals of winter, dark and strong to fight against the cold.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to need those metals, all right, in the wars to come.
To fight against the cold, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's cool. This is, the crown is there. He's crowned. You know, a line that jumps right out to you is, it is no easy thing to wear a crown, right? I mean, it's like, he's always messing with it.
Especially for a boy of 15 years, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And he is faced with a lot of different decisions. You know, and his mother had counseled him prior to just, he has to be more decisive and follow sort of, you know, listen to his bannermen, draw upon the wisdom that he got from his father and just make decisions, you know, just be king, if you will, be the lord that they need, the king that they need, and act. And what's crazy is now he is making decisions. She is seeing, it's really like, gosh, it's almost too, like, if his lord father were here, if this were Eddard, you know, counseling him, obviously, you know, he'd be the king of the north. But, like, if it's the fact that it's his mother, you know, she mentions several times that it's the fact that she's a woman or that she's his mother, that her counsel doesn't seem to sway him as much as the other men. Although he will listen, like, I think he's being talked out of it. I almost wonder if there's another side to this conversation we're not seeing, which is his bannerman saying, your mother is grieving. There's a lot of emotions going on there. Mm-hmm. And it sort of sucks, but I mean, that's just what George is we're seeing this through Catelyn. She says this a couple times.
Yeah, exactly. And that's important. And that's something, again, that I think every time it comes up, I talk about it because I cannot hammer home enough that every chapter in this series, it's all important whose chapter it is. Eyes it's through, because that drastically changes the events. You know, because we'll get to the terms here in a second, but I would almost argue that if you are Cersei, I'd accept these terms, because when Cersei legitimately believes later that we're gonna die at the Battle of the Blackwater. Yeah. I mean, she legitimately is ready to basically, give her children the gift of mercy, right? And their death. Because she literally believes that we're about to die. And that's just Stannis. To me, really, all the North wants is their sisters back and to be left alone. And then they're like, we're out of the war. You do whatever you want. Yeah. So if you're in that position where you've got enemies on the east with Stannis, enemies on the west with Renly, and you're just kind of sitting in the middle, and then, you know, Dorne is just like, we're out of it, but there, you know, there's a mountain, so it's not really like you could even really request Dorne come to your aid. Mm-hmm. And even if that would really be like their only other ally they could go seek outside of, you know, Braavos. And, you know, it's not like Dorne is ever going to side with the Lannisters at this point. I mean, what are your options? I mean, your only option to me would be to at least give you a chance to fortify kind of King's Landing by bringing in, the men from the Westerlands and just saying, okay, like, you can be king of the North, but we just want you, and you can be an independent nation. And then if you want to try and take it back, you can deal with that later. But I feel like your best bet would be like, okay, we'll trade you Jaime Lannister, you know, a battle commander that we desperately need for your sisters. Absolutely. Like, and then, and because we've got enemies on the east and the west. I mean, it's only because Stannis kills Renly and that the war breaks open and it becomes its own thing. But
yeah,
you know, and that Theon, real quick, and Theon is about to, you know, betray the Starks, which kind of holds them off a little bit. But really, I mean, that's it. That would be your only bet.
Yeah. Well, and what's crazy, what's a little bit like, it's really interesting how when we get into the proposal here and what they ask for, like, it's the sequence in which Rob ask for these things to happen. So, like, he wants to give up a few of the, like, cousins or lesser Lannisters for his sister, for his sisters. Mm-hmm. And he's actually not willing to give up, like, Jaime Lannister until... He's holding him until, like, eventually. I think what he should have done is said, you know what, keep my sisters, move your arm, like, here's the things that I will give you, some of these Lannister people, right, some of your kin, mm-hmm. If you move out of our way, and if you position yourselves here, we'll position ourselves here, and then we'll have a couple, you know, the two great hosts meet up. We want our sisters back for, you know, Jaime Lannister. The problem is, and something that Catelyn says here, is that really, and again, this goes back to women and just the way, like, we have powerful women in this series, and George does a great job, and he's kind of commenting on really our own histories and what this would look like in Westeros. The two girls, the two Stark girls, are not worth Jaime Lannister.
And absolutely not. Yeah, not even close.
So that's why although they are to Rob to the Stark family in front of his Lord's Bannermen, no. Not good enough.
Yeah, let's read some of these things. He says, you know, first the queen must release my sisters and provide them with transportation from King's Landing to White Harbor. You know, then it's understood that Sansa's betrothal to Joffrey is at an end. You know, and then it's, I will release the queen's cousin, to safe or escort to Casterly Rock. Secondly, my lord father's bones be returned to us. Like, okay, that's no really big deal there. What do you care about some bones? Third, my father's great sword Ice will be delivered to my hand again. In the grand scheme of things, Valyrian steel is pretty important, but it's just a sword. At the end of the day, it's just a sword.
Yep.
Now, is it a sword that theoretically could be used to kill, you know, a White Walker and stuff like that? Down the line, but right now that's just a sword. Fourth, my queen will command her father, Lord Tywin, to release those knights. That they took captive at the Battle of the Trident, and then I'll start releasing my own. You save Jaime Lannister, who will remain my hostage until my father's good behavior. But even that, like, his reasoning for Tywin, or for Jaime, is like, well, I'm going to hold your commander until your other commander releases our hostages. It's not like he's saying I'm going to hold him for, like, an incredibly long period of time. I think from Cersei's point of view, I would accept this deal. In a heartbeat, because you just have to look at the situation you're in at this current moment, with Stannis on one side, Renly on the other side, Jaime in chains. I mean, I feel like it's not even like they're saying we're gonna take King's Landing. It's just saying we'll leave you alone. Mm-hmm. I would take it in a second, because you could always calm down. You could focus on your two enemies that are pincering you, let's say from this point in time, if you're Cersei, if you take out Renly, even though Renly has a bigger army at this point, I feel just because of, like, the lay of the land, it would be easier to kind of disperse that battle throughout. Whereas Stannis is, like, right there. I mean, King's Landing and Storm's End are, like, right across mm-hmm. the street from each other, pretty much. Well, he's over at Dragonstone right now, but even still, I mean, just the men that he's got, the men that he's got with him, and he's a much more feared commander. It's like, I would rather go against Renly and an enormous army than Stannis and a smaller army.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, from your positioning, it's just like, you know, you can't take on three people at once, let alone soon to be, you know, four.
Yeah. You know, the reason I think that, like, if you're Cersei and you're the Lannisters, the blundering has already started, because if mm-hmm. you had Eddard Stark, well, then, yeah, they're not going to kill Jaime, but we did kill Eddard Stark. And so now I think they possibly are probably thinking, like, well, I mean, maybe they're going to, like, if we answer some of these terms or whatever, we start to kind of get lulled in here, they're just going to kill him. You know, like, at one point, Cersei kind of said, he's dead. He's beyond, obtaining. Like, there's this, it's not possible. Like, you almost have to pretend like he's gone. They're still all hoping to get him back and everything. But that is the chip. And Rob knows you've got to keep Jaime Lannister until the end. Like you've got to exactly. hold, you've got to hold them, but you also have to be willing to sort of like, I mean, I don't know. It's like the sisters, like having the sisters there is just as tough because they've already right. killed your father. I mean, how can you trust these people? How can you trust anything that's going on? You've got a madman
right.
there. And I think that is sort of in the last chapter.
Well,
Rob's really thinking that.
And the other thing is that they, you know, Rob and Catelyn believe they have both sisters, not just one. And so maybe that's something they look at and are like, oh, like, what do we do? You know,
we only have one. And then so they're not going to believe us. They might believe we right. killed the other one, or
they. Whatever. I don't think they would believe. Oh, she just escaped.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
That's gonna be hard to believe. So they are kind of in that situation. The other crazy thing about this chapter introduces is that Sir Devon Lannister and his father, Sir Stafford Lannister, are raising a host to the west. You know, so mm-hmm. I think the Lannisters are thinking, oh, they don't know about that, but the Blackfish right. is all over it. I mean, he's been out
exactly.
scouting, and so he knows what's up. He knows that they're moving this host in. So that is, and once that happens, I mean, we're kind of jumping right to the end of this because it's really, I think we can just kind of talk about this in general. Like something that Catelyn notes is that okay, they're at Harrenhal. There's definitely this itch or this this feeling or this sense among the Bannermen and Rob that they want to just go attack. They just want to go right. attack. Harrenhal and whatever, but they're playing the waiting game. I mean, Tywin's waiting. He's securing what he has. He's planning, plotting. He's also raising another host. And so the opposite is happening here, right? So Rob has lost a bunch of men. Edmure Tully mm-hmm. has sent.
Exactly. And they're going back and forth and they're arguing a little bit. You know, Edmure is saying like, do we grow any stronger sitting here? Our host dwindles every day.
Yeah, and again, that's Edmure's fault. I mean, because sending the
everything's Edmure's fault.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah,
yeah. the blunders that are made. It's crazy. Right. So this is one of them, in that they send these river lords back to their keeps, and really they go back to barren land, massacres, and other raiding. Some of them are even killed. So and they're not going with like a good. I mean, I don't know. They're going in with they're outnumbered and they're mm-hmm. facing down like the mountain and his men and stuff. So like the raiding that's happening is just the Lannisters are all over that. And they're dividing these groups. Really, I think like the idea would be that you would take your host and you would march through and kind of, you know, secure these areas. Although then you're very predictable. We know where you're coming. We know where the host is moving. And then maybe if you move away from River Run, do you open up for, you know, another attack to come in that way? Because Casterly Rock is actually not too far off to their west. And if they were to move right. south and try to secure like House Bracken and some of these other places, like they could just slip in behind. That host could come up behind. And then honestly, they would be caught between Harrenhal and River Run. I mean, if they were to mm-hmm. lose it. So mm-hmm. it is a tough spot because their host is dwindling while the Lannister host is building. The problem I have with, and we'll see later on, Cersei is just, when she refuses these terms and stuff, and she does, you know, Tyrion makes a good counter offer and stuff, and they do send right. the bones back.
And then it all goes in a different direction because of the events that happened then. But I mean, at this point in time.
Yeah. It's like, at this point in time, once you get down, so really you have to look at like, does she know about this other host? I don't know that she actually did. They knew about the other host that was forming over at Casterly Rock. I can't remember. We'll have to see when we get there in those chapters. But I have a feeling she didn't. But maybe Tyrion did. You know. So we'll see. But anyways, it's a little wild to kind of think about the situation that they're in here because. You know, and this is why the Blackfish and Catelyn Tully kind of come up with the idea of getting Renly involved. You know, it's like, okay, who else? I mean, we need another host. The only way you're going to move Tywin off of Harrenhal or move their forces around is to get another group. I mean, you know, another because the Vale's not answering the call. They're not coming to help. So you've got the Riverlands, and that's it. You get the North and the Riverlands, and you've even seen, you know, one or two of his lords storm out when he starts to read some of the proposals. So, or the terms, right? Mm-hmm. So he's got to do something, and really, it's his mother who kind of comes up with this plan to recruit Renly and get his host involved, which could be kind of a diversion or could move the pieces around in a way that would be more advantageous for Rob,
right,
in his group.
Well, and you know, again, this all the Rob chapters are pretty much told through. Well, they're all pretty much told through Catelyn's eyes. You know, and when they're going back, you know, and she's saying, you know, she wants him to release Jaime. He says, I can't release the Kingslayer, not even if I wanted to. My lords would never abide by it. She's like, your lords made you king, and you can unmake me just as easy. If your crown is the price we must pay to have Arya and Sansa return safe, we should pay it willingly. Half your lords would like to murder Lannister in a cell. If he should die while he's your prisoner, the men will say that he deserved it. Rob said, you know, and your sisters, will they deserve their deaths as well? I promise you, if any harms comes to her brother, Cersei will pay us back blood for blood. And so, I mean, it is from Catelyn's point of view, when you have essentially an army that all wants to just kill this guy because they're all bloodthirsty for it. Mm-hmm. I think in her mind, one is she wants her daughters back because she doesn't really care. I mean, you know, she cares far more about her daughters than she cares about Jaime Lannister. But I do think that Rob being a little more hesitant, be like, no, we need him. He's a bargaining chip. But Catelyn also has this idea of like, well, if we don't do something with him quick, he's mm-hmm. probably going to die. And then we lose our bargaining chip.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think part of her.
It's ironic, dude. It's so ironic because she so believes and feels that way. And I get it. Like there is a reason why she realizes that that there are men, as you say, bannermen, who want to go kill him because they lost their mm-hmm. sons or their family members, whatever, in the battle, right? Where they captured him. So, but it's just ironic because later on she ends up being the person who loses the bargaining chip,
exactly,
and just on some risk on his honor that he's going to do these things makes him swear like, what, this is guy, it's Kingslayer, and right. We'll get there later. That's just crazy.
Well, and Rob makes a completely idiotic decision here in a page or two when he mm-hmm. sends, you know, when he sends Theon out to try and see if he can get the Greyjoys to come with him.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I mean, we're pretty much there. I mean, we can kind of jump to that. Oh, unless you had something you wanted to say. Really
no,
quick.
The only thing I was going to say is that like, it seems like, so let's say each of them have five decisions to make between Rob and Catelyn. It's like, I feel like they both are like, you know, three for five, you know, it's like they make good decisions, right. But then there's a couple that are just like, what, you know, we know they end up being bad decisions, and you look at where they are positioned now. And it does seem like, okay, I can trust Theon. I'm going to send him there. No big deal. Like, he's fought for us. He's protected us. But Catelyn is older, and she's seeing something in his eye where mm-hmm. he's getting bold. He's getting confident.
Right.
He's that ironborn nature might be coming out in him and stuff. So,
right. Well, and you know, hindsight is 20/20, pun intended.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, unless you're Sir Ezra the Watchful,
right.
Who, well, I mean, I don't know. You've had LASIK. Does that give you 20/20?
It's 20/20, man. Trust me. Hey. I wanted to be super watchful for the wars to come.
Well, okay? as I'm getting older here, you know, maybe I need LASIK, things aren't looking as clear as they used to, but, you know, so obviously we know what ends up happening with Theon, but I think I'd even argue that, because, you know, some of these decisions, we know what ends up happening. And so we can say, well, that obviously was a bad decision given what happens. But I think Catelyn's right. Even at this point, I do think it would be a bad idea, even without knowing, you know, like what happens. If you were reading for this for the first time, I think you could even be like, yeah, that seems like a bad idea mm-hmm. sending Theon, just because up to this point, what we know about Theon is that he's kind of reckless, right?
Yeah.
Like when they get attacked by Osha, and he kills the wildling that's got Bran, and Rob's like, yeah, but you could have killed him,
right?
I mean, like what are you doing? Yeah. And so at up to this point, in the limited amount of information that we know about Theon, I do think if you were reading this for the first time, you'd be like, that's a bad idea. So even without knowing what happens, I do think it's a pretty awful idea.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is...
Just as is, real quick.
Yeah.
Just as is, and then obviously once you find out what happens, it's like, I mean, horrendously bad. I mean,
yeah. Well, and it's the Ironborn too. The thing that they forget is that they've gotten used to Theon, and they don't remember that the Greyjoys have rebelled not too long ago, and they had to put that Greyjoy rebellion down. That's why Theon is at Winterfell. I mean, like, his brothers were killed. Theon's were because of this, because of their nature. Their nature to raid and to, you know, they worship their own gods and they're kind of different.
Right.
They raid. They want to be in power. They feel like they're kind of looked down upon. So yeah, like, be careful here. I mean, at one point they even say, like, if they want a crown, they can have a crown. Like, he didn't even care. I mean, Rob's just like, whatever. But that doesn't mean they're going to side with you necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
So they're out for themselves.
And throughout, I just want to make a point here is that, you know, Catelyn has kind of her own dialogues, you know, with Rob as she's seeing him make these decisions, right? And they're kind of arguing. You know, she says, like, what was it, war that made him grow so fast, she wondered, or the crown they had put on his head? And then she has another one later, you know, God's be good, what is to become of me? He is doing his best, trying so hard. I know it, I see it, and yes, you know, I've lost my Ned, the rock my life was built on. I could not bear to lose the girls as well. So that is one thing in this chapter, is that she has these kind of these dialogues as we progress through, and so you can kind of see her reasoning. And some people, like, you know, in the show, I think it comes across sometimes that Catelyn is just, like, crazy impulsive or a little, like, erratic. But I think that's what the book helps show her emotions, and her what's going on in her mind. So it's, you know, she wants her daughters back, man. She's already lost her husband, their father.
Yep.
They're on the brink. Well, they are in war.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if she loses her kids, like, what's the point of all of it?
Right. Yeah.
You know,
she actually
family, duty, honor.
Yeah. She keeps us really kind of grounded. Yeah. To those core values. And that's the position from which she's operating. I mean, she's not wearing the crown, though, too. That's the other thing. And it's just sort of, she's giving good advice, but at the same time, I also say that Rob is right in that she's only looking at it through that lens. And he is now wearing the crown. And he does have, he even says at one point, like, his Lord's Bannermen who put the crown on him, they can take it off. And,
exactly.
Like, I mean, it's just like... He can be
well. It's not really like the North is in this great position to be running this war. I mean, you build your host with the North and then the Riverlands, and the Riverlands aren't really doing so hot. I mean, Hoster Tully's dying. You've got to deal with the Freys, who are basically just, like, you know, out for their own interests. They have to go. I mean, Catelyn tries to advise him on a lot of these different. Thing is, like, it's going to be no easy task to go try and take on, you know, the Lannisters.
Yeah, for sure. Yep. Well, okay, so once we move, you know, kind of past that, there's a couple cool little just connections, I guess, I want to touch on, like, three things here. So the Red Comet, Beric Dondarrion, and then just Hoster Tully and his mad visions and rantings and ravings are a couple things that come out in this chapter that are pretty cool. It seems like the Blackfish had a chance to actually settle, or, you know, kind of talk with his brother and reconcile things a little bit, maybe. But he's also been out kind of scouting and looking at what's going on. And we've mentioned this already, but he's hearing rumor of Beric Dondarrion harassing Lord Tywin's raiders. And people are boasting, though, that they've killed Beric, but yet he's still out there. He's still fighting, you know, so interesting rumors. And Thoros is out there with him, the Red Priest, and so he's just coming back, letting us know what's going on in the Riverlands, and we're keeping up with, like, the Mountain, and, you know, how he's killing and destroying various River Lords and ending the line of, like House Dairy and stuff. It's just kind of wild. We get all of that. Then we get that conversation about the Red Comet, too, and, like, is it, what does it mean? You know, and it's still something that people are looking at. And, like, it's funny that Brendan kind of says it means blood. It's blood. And is it their blood or our blood? It's blood. We're at war, and that's sort of what it means to him. But one thing that's interesting is that Coster Tully is having those. She just mentions it briefly, but Catelyn right. is talking about how he has those. He's been, you know, drinking a lot of dream wine, mm-hmm. and he's been sleeping, but he's been assuming that, like, he's been thinking that she is her mother, and he's been mixing her up with her sister and things like that, you know. So we're gonna get more on his ranting and ravings later, and just sort of secrets, the Tully secrets, if you mm-hmm. will, from him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, we will, and we'll learn a little bit about not Tysha, but Tansy.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. So. All right. Well, that's kind of it for the chapter. It's kind of actually a short chapter, but it's because it's the first Catelyn chapter. It's kind of just setting the stage. This is where we're going to be in this book. You know, we're at war, and mostly, it's about Jaime.
Yeah.
Honestly, the Rob chapters and how it seemed, man, everything was going so well for them, in the last, you know, couple chapters, where they captured Jaime and everything's good. But as the Song of Ice and Fire goes, as soon as something looks like it's going well, that is never, ever the case. So,
yeah. Yep.
All right. So, all right. Well, let's move on over to Send the Ravens. I think we got two here today. One is from Minnie. She says, who do you think Ned wrote to in the Black Cells? Remember, Varys says he would read it and then decide if he will send it, this letter. I think it could have been to Jon, since it was believed Ned would go to the Wall. Could it have been to Sansa? I wondered if it was delivered at all, or if it is still a mystery like Rob's will.
Yeah, this is great. Now, I actually have the book here. I want to just confirm that. So, He is, Eddard, this is one of his last chapters here where he's talking to Varys, and he is, I'm just going to read some of this. So he's studying, you know, the eunuch's face and searching him for truth, and they're talking about why all this is happening. He says, you know, could you set me free from this pit? He says that I could, but will I? No. Questions would be asked, and the answers would lead back to me. Ned had expected no more. You are blunt. A eunuch has no honor, and a spider does not enjoy the luxury of scruples, my lord. Would you at least consent to carry a message out for me? That would depend on the message. I will gladly provide you with paper and ink if you like, and when you have written what you will, I will take the letter and read it, and deliver it or not as best serves my own ends. Your own ends? What ends are those, Lord Varys? Peace, Varys replied without hesitation. If there was one soul in King's Landing who was truly desperate to keep Robert Baratheon alive, it was me. He sighed. For 15 years, I protected him from his enemies, but I could not protect him from his friends. What strange fit of madness led you to tell the queen that you had learned the truth of Joffrey's birth? Wow. So mm-hmm. you start to get some insight into Varys there, right? We've talked about that a little bit. But really, so they move on from the message. It's just mentioned, and they move on. So you have to assume, yeah, maybe followed up with paper and pen and ink, and the message was left there, whatever. We don't really see it handed off, but you can assume that it was written and that Varys has it. And it'll probably be in his penmanship with his sign. Maybe he signs it, and somebody can authenticate it, but maybe, you know, what happens, right?
Yeah, you know, I'm looking on Reddit and the wiki, and there's like no mention of this thing. And so I don't know if anything ever comes from it, but man, it doesn't seem like anybody's ever really brought this up. I mean, even on the Reddit, which I find like crazy to believe, because I'm just trying to look for it, but the only letter they bring up is the one that he writes to Stannis.
Right, right. Right. Yeah, so what message did he want to leave? Yeah, I'm guessing, so the question is asked to us, put to us, like, I don't remember. I mean, it's not answered anywhere. I mean, it's not like a message was sent to anyone, as far as I know.
Not that I know of. Yeah, I mean, so who knows?
Like, Varys is still sitting on this. He still has it.
It could be to anything. Maybe I pulled up one here. Okay, here's a thread I found. While Ned is held captive, Varys visits him, and the two have an exchange. The following stuck out to me. Did Eddard ever write the letter? Who would he have written it to? You know, a lot of people point to Jon Snow to let him know who is of his parentage. Could that mean that Varys has the proof of Jon's true lineage? It says no one knows. I don't think it's ever brought up again. Some people said, you know, it could be going to Howland Reed. Mm-hmm. He's this guy. This guy says this is like from a, you know, some of those like websites like Quora or whatever, where you, whatever it is, you know, that website where sometimes you just ask questions and people answer them. He says, my guess would be Howland Reed, where he says, dude, I've messed up. Bring the army.
Oh, that would definitely go against peace, right? Varys probably would not
right.
pass that.
Yeah, I don't know.
Dude, I messed up.
Bring the army.
Oh, that's hysterical.
Like, bro.
Bro. Help me out here, man.
Help me out. Yeah. So I don't know. I think if he were to write a letter, even thinking he's going to the wall, it probably is a message just to Catelyn being like, you know, like, I love you type of a thing.
Yeah. What I think might be interesting is because since Lord Varys says that, and he says that it, he'll deliver it if it suits his own purposes, I would say that Eddard would want to write a letter that wouldn't raise any suspicion with Varys, but it could be coded, and he might send that to Howland Reed, and it might be a coded way to tell Howland to tell Jon the truth. You know,
yeah,
because,
but I don't. The only thing though is, it seems like Ned and everyone is incredibly shocked when Joffrey says off with his head, right? Mm-hmm. I think Ned legitimately believes he's going to the wall, and if that's the case, he would just tell Jon in person.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah. So what other thing do you think he would tell somebody then? Like,
I just
a love
that's
letter
why
to Catelyn.
That's yeah, especially since it's like, I may not see you again, kind of a kind of a thing. Since even though it's not that far, but
wow, that could be the thing that turns Lady Stoneheart's heart of stone back to a
right. I mean unless he thinks maybe it's like a who knows. It seems you just never know. Like, I could go to the wall, but it's possible I could die. But I mean, it seems, especially, and I think the show does an amazing job of this, but I mean, everyone seems pretty shocked. But then from Arya's point of view, I think sometimes we're blinded by the show. It's like pretty chaotic when Arya sees it. So maybe it's possible in the books, it's not as surprising to Ned. Like, when Arya sees it, it's like pure chaos is going on.
Right. So the one thing, I don't know, like the timing on this, I get that he goes out there. Varys does say to him right before that, I trust you realize that you are a dead man. I mean,
right.
So you wonder if, like,
maybe he doesn't. Maybe Varys does actually know that Joffrey's going to be irrational.
Maybe. I don't know. Does he say all that stuff just to spare his daughters and it's not really about himself? I just don't know.
I don't know. But that would be my guesses. Yeah. But I do. I my hope actually is it is quite literally word for word. Dude, I've messed up. Bring the army.
Bring the army. Oh, dude, that would be wild. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. That was a good one. I thought that was good because I went back and I was just like, wait a second. Yeah. The way it's written too. It's not like he says, okay, like, it's not like Varys follows up with him later and says, all right, I'll bring that. Like, he doesn't come back to the message. They move
It could, it could come up again. I mean, but it's also possible he just didn't write it, right? I mean, he says, well, I'd let you, but, and so it's not like we see him writing a letter and then it's like, you know, Ned, you know, so I don't know.
Well, I think one thing that Varys is doing there, though, is he does maybe convince, you know, Eddard, like, yeah, so look, this is a Game of Thrones. We're all playing a game here. Just because I'm playing it doesn't mean I'm a bad guy. You know, right. I'm playing it because it is the nature of what's going on here, but I'm playing it for because I want peace. And you came down here, and unfortunately, I couldn't save him from you and from even, you know, John Arryn and others who are like figuring out the schemes and the plotting that's going on with the Lannisters. So it just, you know, sucks. But right. Yeah.
Right. So, all right. Well, we have one more here. Hello, sirs, Matt and Ezra. I have had a, and it's possible we read this. We found it in our emails. We were going through. We've been kind of cleaning it out since we have a lot. So, I mean, it's entirely possible that we read this before. I don't believe so, but even if we did, we're going to read it again. So, yep. Hello, sirs, Matt and Ezra. I have had a theory idea that I have been pondering for a while lately, and I'm interested on your take of this. I did a quick search online and did not find anyone else discussing this. However, I expect that it is out there because it seems like an obvious thought now that I'm considering it. I have been re-listening to some of your previous Follow-Up Friday episodes on topics I enjoyed and came across one where you were discussing the three heads of the dragon. My question is, since so many of us believe Rhaegar is still alive somewhere, why do we not consider him to be one of the three heads? If he reveals himself to the world in the books, he would have as much the ability and a better claim to ride one of the dragons as Tyrion or Young Griff or Jorah, as I see considered online. I love the idea of him coming back and, if they prevail at the end, ascending to the Iron Throne as king with his sister and son, wed to follow his rule to the Seven Kingdoms. Here are my rabbit hole thoughts I drown in while I consider this theory. Did Rhaegar go into hiding after the Battle of the Tower of Joy? You know, with Arthur Dayne, Ashara, possibly, stuff like that, to wait until the dragons were back in the world? Was the ending of the battle at the Tower of Joy a ruse to cover for their disappearance? Could we have known that Dany would bring the dragons back from the Woods Witch / Ghost of Highheart? If Melisandre is really Jenny of Olstones, is there another tie-in with her and Rhaegar at the Wall when Jon Snow is Lord Commander? Is there another secret prophecy that led to the tragedy at Summerhall? Did Sir Duncan the Dahl leave information behind or tell Rhaegar directly something about the events of Summerhall? What Rhaegar found that led him to stop playing and learn to fight a prophecy for the future? Where the dragons come back to help save mankind from the others. I keep thinking about what information we are missing that will enlighten us to these events, and I believe that they are connected. I hope this message is not too chaotic to follow. Every time I start thinking about the series, I go down the same rabbit hole and get lost in all of these possibilities. It is what I love about Gurr's writings. I love the show, and you guys do a great job. I'm also a big fan of Hyperspace Hangout. I wish you all the best, Ryan Turbush.
Wow, thanks, Ryan. That's awesome. This is cool, and it is. I love this. You know, people when they go back and they listen to, gosh, because we've even developed. Like, I'm thinking back. I don't go listen to those Fallout Friday episodes. I mean, they're cool. We did some good research on that, on those mm-hmm. episodes. But also, I know our thoughts have changed, and
absolutely
with the show and things we've seen. It's sort of like, dang, I now, like it's our minds just run wild with conspiracy theories and, you know, different identities and all this stuff. But the more I think about it, it's like, dang, that'd be a huge thing. You know, if Rhaegar came back, and I think it'd be cool. I think it may be that he was around if he lived. I'm going with if Rhaegar was alive, but I don't think he makes it to the end, because otherwise that's something that seems like the showrunners would know about. Like, you just kind of like wonder,
well,
you just
don't know. Right.
But no, you wouldn't. Absolutely, no one knows. But it's sort of like they were said. I mean, you know, I guess they were told Bran was going to be king. You know, it's like, what did they come up with that on their own? That's the thing. That's where the show makes us. That's why I say, like, it makes us question some of those things. I love the idea. Then now I go back and when I think, is Rhaegar alive? You know, if he is alive in the books and he's revealed, then absolutely, Ryan's right. Then he's going to be crowned king, and then the Targaryen line continues through, you know, his sister and his son. And that's
right.
Whatever, well, really cool. But, you know, yeah.
Well, okay. Well, I think that he could be still alive, and he could still be a three-head of the dragon, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he, as you kind of said, would survive to the end or that he would be crowned king. If it were Rhaegar, Jon, and Daenerys fighting the Night King, and you needed the three heads of the dragon for that, and then it still ends up in a war, final war of the Seven Kingdoms, then that could happen as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and see, this is where it's kind of cool that if it were that, this is why people like the idea of Mance being Rhaegar, then if he saw or had some foresight to let him know that you won't be there to defend, you know, like it's not going to be you that wields the sword, but it will be someone through you, and you're going to need to be around to kind of like pass the torch or guide someone or make sure that they're safe until the end. That'd be cool. It'd be kind of a cool little thing. And it's, that's where it's sort of like, I think he's a part of the process, but if he's there to the end, then yeah, he's got the best claim for king. But if he died in the last battle, or he died against the Great Other, that would be wild. Or even if he just dies setting somebody up for that battle, and he knows that, okay, right, I've put the sword in the right hands, I've set things up, and here we go, and that's all he could do. And maybe he already did that. That's the other thing that George, with his writing, it makes you question. Maybe that was already done. Everything at Tower of Joy, and maybe the battle that takes place at the Trident, like maybe he did. Maybe going to that battle, he knew that his part was over and it was done. I don't know. I don't, because it's also like, you know, did he? How much of the future could he have seen, or visions that were given to him, or whatever? Like does he see his own death? I mean, that's kind of crazy. Right. Although we have Targaryens who do see the death of dragons, and they do see the death of family members and such. So maybe, like, that's the big thing is when you read Dunkin' Egg series, you're sort of like, well, it's not that long ago that yeah, Targaryens, you know, were having dreams.
You know, I think doing some a dive into just simply, not even is he Rhaegar, but the idea, you know, since we a lot of us are on that, I certainly am one of those Rhaegar is Mance people. But I don't know that we've really ever just done a dive on just remove the idea of him being Rhaegar. Is Mance Raider Azor Ahai? I don't know that that's necessarily been done, or that we've done that.
No,
there is some salt and smoke, right? Like Mance Raider, right, is essentially killed through salt and smoke, right? When Mance Raider, you know, air quote here, is burned at the stake, right? And then he's bleed blue rattle shirt, you know, all that stuff through the glamour. Yeah. But his kind of persona as Mance Raider is then over, and he becomes somebody else. I mean, I think that'd be kind of interesting to do.
Yeah, his story. Gosh, everything that goes on with him becoming Able and at Winterfell, all that stuff is still shrouded in great mystery. Yeah, so that is kind of fascinating to think what his role could be moving forward. I haven't really given that one, but that's definitely a green dream right there in the works, because we were talking about the Pink Letter not too long ago. And
right, exactly.
You know, so, yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe so, something... All right. I don't know.
Certainly, yeah. Perfect. Yeah. Thanks, Ryan, for some ideas for some further rabbit holes, kind of to go down here. But I do believe, you know, he asked a bunch of questions there at the end. And I do think there are, you know, a lot of that stuff is connected, and that's kind of the thing here. As you know, as we on Patreon, we do some of those green dreams and extended editions of the episodes, where you do have to kind of start drawing the lines together, because, well, you know, I think it's hard to have this thing be true and then these other things not be true, right? Like one of the things you and I've talked about, you know, in talking about the our members of the Wildlings and possibly, you know, Corrin Halfhand and stuff like that, are they Mance Raider and Arthur Dayne and stuff like that? It's like, well, one of the most interesting ones, and this is, we can talk about this in the further, a lot further in the extended edition, is like Tormund, right? Like Tormund has, he has some interesting moments where Tormund Giantsbane has some speech that seems like it's not the kind of speech that a wildling would have, right? Where he sounds almost a little like too formal. And then it seems like he then has to cover it up by making like, you know, some kind of a joke or talking like a pirate. Yeah. It's just, his speech is kind of weird. Well, it's like, okay, then so there's the big, well, if Mance is Rhaegar and Corrin Halfhand is Arthur Dayne, then it's possible he's Gerald Hightower, the White Bull, who is the other one of the members at the Tower of Joy. Well, it's like, I don't think that you can have Tormund be Gerald Hightower in his own right and then these other people be, you know, not be like Rhaegar and Arthur Dayne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're saying if one of them,
right?
Is there,
so
then the other ones,
but I do think it's possible for Corrin Halfhand to simply be Arthur Dayne, in his own right, and then I also think it is possible for Mance to be Rhaegar in his own right. Like that could be true. That could be true. But I don't think there's any scenario in which, Tormund is simply Gerald Hightower, and the other things are not true. I think it only works if Corrin Halfhand and Arthur Dayne Corrin Halfhand is like Arthur Dayne and Mance is Rhaegar.
Yeah, it's a little crazy because you'd have to take that all the way back to the Tower of Joy conversation and say like,
right,
okay, if Sir Arthur Dayne does make it, and he is, and you say that he is Corrin Halfhand, well then why wouldn't the other Kingsguards guys have made it? And so if they do make it, then who are they and where are they? Or did they just die before this point?
So, certainly some interesting conversation for extended edition and stuff like that. So thanks, Ryan, for that. So, all right. Well, I do want to give a shout out here quickly to Mark Hess. He supported us over on Ko-fi, which is another way to kind of support us outside of Patreon. We'll certainly give you guys a shout out if you do that over there. All right, Sir Ezra, I think it is time to say farewell here. So we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing Chapter 8, Tyrion 2 of A Clash of Kings.
If you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, or leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com.
Yes, we will see you in a week, and remember that the night is dark and full of terrors.